Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, everybody. What's the word? What's the word? It is October the 8th. It is our anniversary show, 10 years in, and I'm going to skip Rashi for a half a second. Rashi, be patient with me because I'm going to embarrass somebody real quick, and I'm glad that he's on right now. Morning, Mr. Beans. What's the word? What's the word?
Hey, what's up, man? What's going on?
So, ladies and gentlemen, if you've ever listened to the show, you've ever heard the intro, and we actually do have an outro. I haven't played the outro in years, but we actually have an outro. This is the cat that does that. This is the musical director. This is Mr. Beans himself of Mr. Beans Production. This is my man. We were stationed in Alabama together, and then we wound up in Korea at the same time. Two different bases, but we were pretty much there at the same time, and then when he left Korea, he came here to Maryland, and at that time I was out. So we've just stayed in touch throughout the years and whatnot, and we have a lot of funny stories to tell amongst one another and of one another. But the mutual appreciation of music, the mutual respect other in our different spaces and our different places and time has been running deep and thorough for. Damn, Beans, this is old. Yo, 2 years, it'll be 30 years, dog. Ain't that crazy? Wow.
Yep.
That's I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about this moment, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, you know, beat making is something that he does whenever he gets a twitch. And I keep telling him it should be something that he invests in. He's like, it's a plaything for me, son. I'm like, oh my God, you are so freaking talented, dog. Man. You don't even recognize it, you know what I'm saying? So I wanted to give him his flowers, you know what I'm saying, early on because he was on early on. Nah, man, thank you, bro. You know, the main assignment was to keep it to like 2 minutes or less, and you did that brilliantly. You know what I'm saying? Y'all can say or feel however you want to feel, but as I've said it many times before, I needed that. We need that. We need that because there's always something last minute that has to happen, and you all don't need to know about that. And the way we do that is allowing the intro to set the mood and the pace and the tone. And, you know, there's days when I'm like, Roddy's like, oh my God. Like, you hear that music and your blood start pumping. It's like, you know what I mean? We coming, son. You know when you hear we coming. So that's what's up, man. So, bro, you know, again, you did it at the very beginning. You did something for the 5th year. Here's the 10th year. I don't know if I want to switch it up yet. I don't know. I'll hit you over the head. If that becomes necessary.
You do. We ready.
Okay.
We ready for something.
Hey.
But we want to keep it just like you had it, nice and not like
right.
It's the end of the world serious, but they knew that from that intro when they listened to us, it's not, we're not all here. It's not whimsical. It's not going to be horn buttons where we make fun of people. And so I love it because it gives the aura of real news. And while we don't have news for everybody, we always have actionable, real intelligence that we share. So I think it's right. It's raw. It definitely has an urban like feel. It's not elevator music to somebody's mall in New Jersey. It's nice, you know. So, Dean, we ready. 10 years is always when most people switch up something, right? We always
switched it at the 5. So we switched it to 5, so we did it at 10. So if she said we're ready, so I guess we're ready. Sister's spoken, you know what I'm saying? Let's switch it up. Let's do something new. You know what I mean? Go to the lab. Work it out. Did you hear
how you doing, ma'am? And thank you for the compliment, too. I appreciate that.
No worries. I always wonder, where did we get this? Because, you know, I thought it was like stock. You know, you can just go on the Internet and get a picture, a stock picture that somebody took. And I always thought he had went to a website and found some stock. Not good loop, but that he had just found a tight beat loop on the Internet, because they do that, like in SoundCloud and all these other kind of places. And so I was like, but when he's now, okay, I'm to now for real understanding where our intro came from, because I honestly thought he had kind of happened upon that and paid a, you know, a cute little sum for it, and so we could use it without no problem, you know?
So are you working on anything right now, Bean?
Same like you just mentioned earlier. Whenever I get the feeling, I mess with some stuff. I put together a bunch of different beats and listen to them throughout, and then after a while, I start to finish them up, you know, and then I just have them just to listen to. Like I might send them to a CD or email them to myself so I can listen to them in my vehicle. Through my phone, you know, just
so Lowenbrow or Stella Artois right now. What you drinking? What you sipping on? Lowenbrow or Stella right now?
Neither. I'm sipping on a Beck.
Okay.
Sipping on a Beck.
That's his process. There you go. That's his process. Everybody, like, he ain't a drunk. So when he hits the lab, it's a cigar. It's a stogie. It's a brew, and he's just sitting down there just chilling like, okay. Now, look, I got to give y'all some reference to this cat, right? So this cat is Kevin Garnett's brother. So he looks – well, Kevin Garnett looks just like him. He's tall like Kevin Garnett, dark like Kevin Garnett, whole nine, right? And it has not been one time, two times, three times. There's been multiple times this cat was thought to be Kevin Garnett by tourists. You know, he's just walking around because he's a tall, skinny guy. You know what I'm saying? Tall, skinny, dark, skinny. Looks like Kevin Garnett looks like him. So, because he's older than Kevin Garnett. So, real cool, like the music fits his personality, the whole nine. It's just, it's a lovely situation. Bro, I'm telling you, I there's a lot of parts to this. And what you've done with the music and setting the tone is very important. You know what I'm saying? Like, I cannot thank you enough for, you know, being available and being interested in doing it. Like, whenever I call, you know, I'm like, yo, I need something. Like, I got you, son. Don't even worry about it. I got you. You know what I'm saying? Then you send me, like, 6 joints, and it's like, yo, which one do you want? And I'm like, oh, my God, this dude just sent me 6 joints. Like, let me get this, let me get that, let me get that, let me get that. All right, bang him. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I really do appreciate that. I really, really, really do appreciate that. You know, this is
I appreciate you saying that, because when I started making beats, you know, by happenstance, you know, I remember I was saying, I said, man, it'd be nice if one day somebody would like to like it the way I like it, because I made it for me, you know, all my beats. You know, I remember saying, man, I wonder if anybody else would kind of dig it, you know. And so when other people started hearing some of the beats that I was making and was, you know, liking them, I was like, oh, man, that's cool. You know, so it's one thing if you like what you create, but if other people share the same sentiment, it's like, man, that's all right. You know, and that's me, that's more than like any type of money or anything like that. You know what I mean? Just if people can... So what you've done, you know, they can dig it, you know, and, you know, it inspires them in a different way, you know, because that's how art is, you know. Somebody can look at a painting and can get something from it, and someone else can look at the same painting and derive a different thing from that same painting. But as long as they get something from it, and, you know, I think that the artist has done their job. I don't really consider myself an artist, but you know what I'm saying, like, person that made it.
Oh my God, here you go with this again. Boy, you know, I tell you, need to stop. Just too humble. Too humble. Goodness gracious, dog. People can't do what you do. I keep telling you that. Like, everybody can't do that. That's a gift. That's
Believe it or not, and this is why I say I'm not an artist. I'm just a person that I've been like this since I was a child. If there's something that I can't do, but I want to learn how to do it, I will become obsessive and go about it until I master it. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Where I think a true artist, it just comes naturally to them. You know what I mean? It's just it's natural.
Hmm. I disagree with
like
that.
I have.
No, sir.
I disagree
no,
with
that. They, you don't get
yeah,
to see
I mean,
it when they are in
I
their
know,
manic
know,
creative moment. You don't get to see it. So it's at 3:00 in the morning. And they haven't slept, and they're still painting, or they're in the beat room.
Right.
Hey, man, they said, but if people, they just get a blow up mattress and they sleep in the studio when it's time, because it's not just about the time; it's about being in that creative space. No, it is obsessive. I mean, I want you to think, Mr. Bean, about how it distorts how talent distorts the body. Sitting in that beat chair, hunched over that sound machine like that. As much as we love your product, you do take on damage. Not only the financial aspect of having to invest in your endeavors, plus you have other people who saw it from the outside and they have been willing to purchase or involve themselves. So that's all the tenets of talent and artistry, sir. What you don't know is that some other artists, they in there warping their fingers with the shape of the pencil too. They're bending their thumbs back and bending their fingers with the shape of the guitar neck as well. We just don't get to see it. We don't see it, right? So, but you're absolutely right. It don't never look like that to the artist. It looked like their voice. It sounds like when singers talk and they're like, "Oh, you have a beautiful voice." They don't know what you're talking about. They just talk. It come out because that's what's in. And so if you're telling me that you have the ability to hear what hasn't been played yet, that's what I think is most amazing about musicians. We only get to appreciate truly what we actually heard. But what we heard is one of the variations of thousands of variations that played in the head of the creator before we even got to enjoy it. The power to be able to permutate, in mathematics, it's called permutation. The ability to have musical permutation. Well, it could go like this, boom, bing, or it can go like this, bing, boom, and being able to know when to bing, bing, and when to bing, boom. Everybody don't have that. Everybody, we can all appreciate it. We can all say, hey, that's tight, or man, that's too slow. We can have our opinion of music, but very few people have all that music stored inside their thoughts and have only mm-hmm. to filter, have only to filter it left or right depending on their mood to decide what we all will hear.
Mm-hmm.
But look,
it's funny.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say it's funny that you say that because that's actually the work of a producer. For example, like Quincy Jones. Quincy Jones, on a lot of the stuff that we know about, like you know, I mean, he goes back to the jazz days. But if we take it to like say the Off the Wall album, or even the Thriller album, he has these different session musicians in Los Angeles, and he has songwriters like Rod Templeton from the group Heatwave, and he would take what they put out there, they put on the table. And he would sometimes it'd be prearranged and everything to where it's like the rough draft of the song, and then he would take what they put there, and then he would go into his mind and say, okay, I think it would be good if you put this here, put that there, you know, rearrange it here, change the beats per minute. We can go instead of going on a G major. G flat or A major 7 or something. We can take it to this note, this key. We can record it in this key, and that's what producers do. They can take, you know, what's already laid out and then put it together in a different way. And so with hip hop production, instead of having session musicians, we have samples, we have stock sounds that are in our keyboards or in a program that we may use, whether it's FL Studio or Logic or anything like that. And we can take all of these different components and then put them together, you know, and then render it from whatever we have in our head already and put it out there. And then again, just, you know, put it out there. It sounds good to you, but then you say, well, I wonder, will it sound good to everyone else? You know, and that's what producers do, you know, and they produce, you know, so, you know, no different than an assembly line back in the day, still now where, like Ford Motor Company or General Motors, they have outsourced plants that, make the fenders, the corner panels, you know, transmissions and engines, and they take all of those pieces and send them to an assembly plant, and then they put all that together. But some engineers had to sit and figure that stuff out first, how it's going to, you know, put together. And then once they figure it out, they go ahead and take it to the assembly line, and boom, there it is. Now you got a running vehicle, you know. So it's just, yeah. So, you know.
Well, look, man. Again, I wanted to thank you. I wanted to publicly thank you for your hard work and your efforts, and just show you some appreciation without a doubt. You feel me?
Hey, man, I appreciate you, man. Thank you, man. I appreciate, you know, again, just from something that I, you know, do as a hobby, and for you to believe enough in me to, you know, to have something that I put together as part of your, you know, your thing, you know what I'm saying, to have it be an integral part of your show for, you know, so many years. So I really appreciate that.
Right. Well, you know, none of this would have been possible without Rodney Smith. Good morning, Rodney. What's going on, brother?
Good morning, everybody. It's good to hear you, Lee. 10 years and you're still on. That's really a feat that is rarely done nowadays, that ability to start something and then to stick with it. That's pretty big, brother. Big ups to you.
Well, you know, tell both my ex-wives that because they like you on some books. But, you know, this has been my greatest mistress. You know what I'm saying? And it would never have come. It would never have come had you not called me. And so we've been on for 10 years. I guess that was 11, 12 years ago. Because when you called me, and I will never forget this conversation, you were like, yo. Well, you didn't say yo because that's just not your vernacular. You were like, bro, look, man, I'm thinking about getting into this new thing, this internet radio thing, you know, but I know you've been in radio before. What's your thoughts on it? I was like, hey, you know, blah, 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 blah. You're like, all right, cool. Well, what do you think about doing the show? And I was like, yeah, no. And you were like, what? And I was like, yeah, no. Like, dude, I know the energy. I know the amount of effort. I don't have that time right now. I just don't. And you're like, you sure? I was like, absolutely. You know what I'm saying? Then you continue to tell me about the magazine and yada, yada, yada. And you ask me one more time. Like, you sure you don't want to do a show? I was like, bro, absolutely not. I know what it's going to take. I'm not there. Like, okay, well, if you change your mind, let me know. Okay, no problem. We continue to talk, and that was that. And I want to say year, maybe a couple months, I can't remember. I called you back, and I said to you, I said, hey, man, I'm ready to do the show now. He's like, okay, cool. I said, well, how long can we go? He said, well, you can record for 2 hours. The service we use can record for 2 hours. After that, you can still talk, but it's not recorded. I was like, okay. He's like, okay, so you said, then when are you ready to go? I said, well, 2 weeks. So what day you think about? I said, Saturday. You know, I'm thinking 11 a.m. I think that's the perfect time. It gives people an opportunity to recover from the evening before. If they don't want to really get out of bed, they can roll over, you know, listen to us, get their juices flowing, whatever, whatever. And then, boom, get out of bed, boom. And if they are mobile, again, because it's internet-based, they can take us with us on the ride. Just get a couple of laughs while they're getting some information about it. I said, okay. And he said, well, how long are you thinking about doing? He said, well, how long? You said, 2 hours. I said, yeah, well, I'll do 2 hours. He's like, Lee, that's a long time, bro. You sure you're ready? I said, yeah, 2 hours. That's cool. So, okay. So I had my name. I had the panel. I had everything. You were like, oh, okay, cool, bet. Man, we did that first show and called you afterwards, and I was like, Roddy, 2 hours ain't enough. And you said, man, I didn't think y'all were going to stop. I was like, bro, 2 hours is not enough. So the original cast was Kay, Terrence, a.k.a. T-Ham, Audra, may she forever rest in peace, and myself. So it was a well-balanced panel, in my opinion. You know, we got it. Everybody picked up on everything that everybody else wasn't into. Kay was really into finance, so that helped. Terrence was the anti-religious, black power dude, absolutely helped. Audra, sports, fashion, you name it, she was into it. Current events, the news. She did hair from home. All she did was watch TV all day long, and she was into news, sports. That's all she did. Here I am, political junkie, news junkie, sports junkie. It balanced all kinds of ways. And we had a great time. And there have been iterations along the way. I think Kay was the first to fall off. Then Terrence fell off. Audra obviously passed. I bought in another sister for a while. That didn't pan out so well. But then I mustered up the gumption to ask Rashid. So Rashid
and I said, hell no, right? The same way you said, hell no, then I said,
you did.
Hell no.
You did. You did. And only I took a little convincing.
But here's the deal. You're missing somebody. When I came in,
I was doing it.
Who's that other gentleman? He was a deep baritone. Seemed like I would remember his name, but I don't. I'm so sorry. It wasn't Cousin Vic, though. It was someone else that used to do commentary with you. And I didn't barely talk because all I wanted to do was just listen to him talk.
Listen.
He had, like, a Barry White voice.
I don't know who that was. I got to think about that one. Okay, keep going. We ain't going to get stuck. Keep it moving.
It was quite interesting to be asked because, honestly, I have never been asked for my opinion. I just have always volunteered it at the exact wrong moment. So it made me feel good to know that you believe that I was going to get on here and tell the truth. I don't really have a whole bunch of anecdotal. I'm kind of country, and I'm definitely on the lower socioeconomic strata, so I don't have a lot of travel and look what I just bought type stories. But what I do have is a way for people who are down here in the lower 99 to survive. If you're down here in the 99%,
about to be 99.5%, right, Lee? If you're down here with the 99.5%, and you're going to need some skills and talents to narrate, to navigate, that is, what's happening to you in this country. And what I like to think about myself is you can come to me, and I can tell you where the website is to get your loan forgiven. I can tell you about at least three different federal first-time home buyer programs that have to be existing in your state because it's federal. I can tell you about how to start a business in your basement to where the government don't know that you got it down there. so that the government can know and they can't know, right? You got to be able to be versatile just in case your taxes ain't right. What I can tell somebody I found out was important, and I thought it was just annoying. Over the years, I found people who wrote after we'd had shows or they sent articles pertaining to the show we had, and I found out that my words can be helpful and not just get on people's nerves when they don't want to deal with the truth. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to thank you for that, Lee, for a place where I could spread truth, because that's truly all I'm on. I'm on people being smarter than they were when I met them. You know, or at least more having the advantage of taking on more of their own lives, because they're not scared to go here. They're not scared to start. They're not afraid to start their own wheel and stuff, because black people think once you start planting your wheel, you're trying to die. No, we told them, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to start your will and testament or whatever and get your money right for after your death. That's not burning bread on yourself. That's preparing yourself. And it took us saying it several times, and we still may have to say it several times again before we start being able to fight. We're fighting against, well, Lee, you know my mantra, we're fighting illiteracy. We deal with illiteracy.
No. Finish your thought.
And we deal with people's inability to have compassion and empathy. If you really want to know what the crux of the information we share, it's about times when the social fabric of, you know, with compassion, empathy, and being able to, the we talked about last week, the we, that collective we, right? When that falls apart, we have something to talk about. But what we really should be talking about is how our own ways we're going to try to get our listeners, you know, to band together in these communities. We do a pretty good job. We tell people to go meet their neighbor so we're not scared when the police kick the door in. We tell people to, you know, be abreast of your situation. Don't get yourself, keep your head on a swivel. Don't be out there in your phone so bad that you don't hear the bullets whizzing by. You know, we try to alert people in a way to even, you know, opportunities for money. Hey, if you 18 and you really have no plan and you don't know what to do, several times y'all have explained that the military was an optimal place for you all to begin to understand what this world is about. And so you only have to do 4 or 5 years, and then you decide, do you want to do 4 or 5 more? It ain't a lifelong. You don't sign your life away like you signing with Satan or nothing. So you get a chance to look at the military, gauge whether or not you can conform, because that's what it is, whether or not you can conform to the needs of that service. And then you can live a pretty decent life. From what I've seen, you two be able to do. You know,
well,
so we have good advice for them, right?
Well, some of us have lived a very, very good life off that nipple. Uncle Sugar, Rodney, has lived a very good life off Uncle Sugar's nipple. And you know, there's another little guy that's done very well for himself while he's been on the Uncle Sugar train. Good morning, Bird. How you doing, brother?
I'm good, fam. How you been?
I'm good. So You going to try to make full bird before you cut?
Well, you know, it's just the last time I talked to you. I don't know if we had a chance to sort of speak through that, but I actually dropped my retirement papers there, sir. I'm done in May.
All right. Congratulations.
Well, I appreciate
congratulations.
That. Thank you. I figured 30, almost 31 years is probably enough.
Yes. Right. Almost 31 years
better
of your
dip
life.
Out before they start another conflict on you, brother, it's time to dip out because it looks like.
Yeah, definitely trying to do that. Me and my wife looked and we talked about, like, hey, as I look out there in the community, for the opportunities for advancement and that kind of stuff, you know, are those the types of positions that I really want to do, or is there something else that I want to do? And so with some reflection, some prayer, I realized that, you know, I could still do more things other places. And so I'm looking forward to the opportunity to start that next.
Teaching, Brother Bird. We need you in the classroom. We need you to go ahead on and strap on your helmet and your apron and come and get some of those naughty head kids in line.
It's funny because I was asking my daughter, you know, because she's in the school down in Fredericksburg, Virginia, and I think I was talking to some of the other parents, and I said, you know, how many African-American male teachers do they have at the school, or just African-American teachers at all? And they were like, well, none. The principal is a sister girl, and so she's doing big things, but, you know, she's the principal. But as far as in the classroom with our young, impressionable little kids, you know, our voice is not being represented, at least not at her school. And so it made me think about that exact thing, like how many other places, you know, because as we all know, it can be very important to have somebody that looks like you doing things, you know, to let you know that it's possible. So.
Absolutely. But, you know, you hit on the keynote for today, which is that next chapter. You know, as we turn this page and starting on gaining toward year 11, you know, it's amazing to me. I've been all over the board this week emotionally. Can't even lie. Won't even try to lie. You know, I've been excited, nervous, appreciative, not angry, disappointed. Disappointed that I didn't dive into something deeper. You know, obviously that over the years, some connections have been severed, and I allow that to happen versus working on maintaining a roadway, maybe not necessarily a bridge, but at least a roadway or a pathway. I've been thinking of the hundreds of interviews that we've done. It has been hundreds. It's been 10 years, so it's been hundreds. The hundreds of interviews we've done, the people, the one lady that was doing the bras and sending them to Africa so that women could sell them in the marketplace in order to earn money so they could have their independence. Mandela's funeral. Hell, I was just in London when the Queen passed away. I mean, just all of this stuff, all, you know, the places, the people, the times, like, wow, dude, it's been a hell of a ride. It really has. And to express the amount of gratitude that I have, not only for you all, but for the listeners, past, present, future, I can't. The words do not come to me at all. It amazes me every week when we flip that switch and we go live and somebody's take time out of their lives and go, I want to hear what you all have to say. And they communicate that. They tell Rodney. They tell me. They text me. They call me. They send me a little note. They text Rodney. They call Rodney. They send him a little note. You know, Rashi's out here getting more and more guests here lately. You know what I'm saying? Just, and let me tell you, that
when
was
I do, And I finally got a forum, too. I'm so glad you said that, because I used to just look at here in Kansas City. I'd be able to attend seminars or whatever and be in events with people that I really admire. But there was never mm-hmm. any reason for me to really approach them or ask them any kind of in-depth questions or gain any real knowledge that I could share other than that they're good people. With this show, mm-hmm. I have learned that one of my favorite pastors was
a robber.
Through the military. He was doing all kinds of things. Right. I learned, my uncle, we transitioned with my uncle from being incarcerated. We had a show with him behind the walls, and we were able to have a show with him a couple of months later after he was less than a year later after he was freed, and we got a taste of what he's been up to with his homeless tenants rights association union that he's helped doing the work of. So mm-hmm. I am just like, oh my gosh, I have had so many people come through that I almost forgot. My girl Gay, the substance abuse counselor, who was mm-hmm. talking about how you don't know you at the bottom. Somebody else tells you your bottom because you get accustomed to the bottom when you on dope. You understand? You mm-hmm. find yourself a new bottom when you're a staunch addict. And so, yeah, that kind of information that has been shared that had just, pinged in my thoughts over the years and just resonated. And I never could have heard a word if it wasn't for a radio established to address life.
We had a difficult patch about 2 years ago, I think. I called you, what did I call you? I said, what's up, baby? Yeah, I said, what's up, baby? And you took offense to that. And that was a real spat, y'all. That wasn't no bullshit. So I was like, yo, what is wrong with her? You're like, everybody I know talks like that. You know, I don't talk like that. It's like, really? Like, but, it's one of those cultural things. So and it's unique to this side of the world. So
I don't call you right. Blue man. I don't call you little man, right. Sweet cake, sugar cake, right. Baby cake. No, right. I have no permutation of Lee, brother Lee.
Right. So, be it us telling the news or us making some news or us being the story, again, man, it's just that pouring out on Saturday mornings consistently. We're only on 52 weeks out of the year. We do more of those than not. Every now and again, we all need a break, right? So we take a break every now and again. But for the most part, we're on more often than not, way more often than not. We haven't had anything just stupid crazy lately that we've had to break and do something in the middle of the week. Though we have done that before. We haven't had anything like that as of late. But if Trump gets arrested, then we will do that. I don't give a damn what day it is. We will do that.
Now, Brother Lee,
but
what I look forward to us doing is incorporating interviews that we have had to do at other times into the show. Often we get hitched up with people being quite busy Saturday mornings and afternoons, right?
Mm.
And as much as they want to interview with us, it's just a time constraint that none of us could get around. I'd like us to get more comfortable doing an interview on Monday, through Friday, that we are willing to broadcast on Saturday.
The issue has never been an issue with that. The issue with that has always been it cheapens the impact on the audience because the audience isn't able to ask questions in real time. So it's not an issue to do it because we've done it. Like the biggest one we ever did was the interview with DL. That was pre-recorded and we dropped it in. The issue with that, though, is the audience isn't able to ask questions in real time. The audience doesn't have access to that person in real time. So all that they have is what we ask, and that might not be what was needed. You dig? So it can happen. It will happen because you're right. You know, we should not pass up on an excellent interview because of the inconvenience of not having direct access in the moment. But it just hasn't happened as often because it doesn't allow people their input in real time. And, you know, if we miss a question, if we miss their misstep because we're just caught up in, I got 30 minutes, I need to get this done in 30 minutes so that it fits in that block, then how good and or effective was it really? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well,
Rodney,
one of my favorite guests we've – go ahead, Rodney.
Rodney, what did you think about this, bro? I mean, you know, this wasn't your baby nor your brainchild, but Our Own Voices Live and Our Own Voices Network is your brainchild and your baby. What do you think about us continuing on, you know, 10-plus years later?
Well, like I said earlier, Lee, to have that stay in power for 10 years is a feat. I mean, heck, we got the 7-year itch when it comes to marriage, but yet, you know, you're still here after 10 years and still going strong with so much more to do. And like Sister Rashi says, have made an impact, not just where you are, but where she is and where I am. You know, so that makes it a national endeavor. So, you know, when the formula is working, you try not to mess with the formula too much because you might get Coke 1 or something like that. So you
get
stick with the formula that's been working.
Get one of them funny tasting candies out of there. I did not realize how the power of what you just said. We got this whole nation covered from virtual coast to coast, Midwest, mm-hmm. East, Southwest, North, Upper Midwest. We have covered this nation with our ability to see, you know, take the pulse of this nation in the metropolis that we're in. And we all chose, you know, Kansas City is probably on the smaller scale of what you three do, but it's still, as does Missouri, usually as does the whole country. And so, dang, Brother Rodney, how smart is it not to have us all congregated in one place, say where we meet live in a video sense, but to have us spread across the nation where we can see what information is doing, what it means in all these different areas. I never even thought about it like that before, Mr. Rodney.
Well, you know, even though you all get me up early in the morning to join you, and I actually thought it was just going to be every once in a while. I didn't know it was going to be every Saturday. I was like, Lee done stole my Saturday morning. So, yeah, I bet.
I deserve it.
But, you know, it's one of those things where if it comes together and it works, you know, you keep stirring those same ingredients. You know, if you want to add a little something to modernize the show, sometimes that's okay to stick with where the people are. You know, the video is where people are nowadays. But as powerful as adding that can be, the reality of it is radio still exists as it always has existed. The only difference is instead of the airwaves, we're doing it through, you know, the digital realm. So to add something like that, to spice it up, to try it, I think that's definitely a direction that you all should consider. And there's various platforms and mechanisms that you could use now to bring that to fruition. So I think if I was going to try to add a little something to the mix, if not on a permanent basis, at least every once in a while, let the people see who we are. I don't know if that'd be a good thing with me or not, but let the people see who we are.
Well, Brother Rodney,
maybe see who they are.
That's my biggest deal.
You got a whole photo shoot going with the sticks and, you know, everybody know Brother Rodney, especially if you're going to do the real work, the grassroots work of what they say, feed, what the doctrine, the religious doctrine say, feed all of God's people. when you are doing that work, you don't have to worry about being seen. We see you, Brother Rodney. We see that work, and we didn't really get a chance to discuss it with you last week, but how was that last food drive? Did I read it right? $150,000 worth of food, or was that pounds of food?
Lost track of the pounds, but it was about $150,000 that we gave off on the spot, and it was over the 5-week period. It was about I don't know the exact numbers. I know in one day we received $500,000 worth of food, and we were able to distribute that to the homeless people on the streets and people who reside under the overpass. We just pull up the bus and drop off food, and then we took it to the community. And this last Saturday, we actually drove around a little bit, dropped some off at a dispensary. People were lined up. Within 2 hours, that was gone. But we fed a bunch of people there, and then we dropped off some to us.
Hungry people at a dispensary. I would never
hungry
thought
people
that.
At a dispensary. You know, it goes together, right? But here's the big piece, though. We went to the community center, and they had a basketball tournament. And when we first got there, we was like, man, is this going to work? Because we're just people who came together from the community to do this. And we did some social media posts and made some phone calls. And it went from literally a trickle to where we was like, what are we going to do with all this food if we're not able to give it away? Because how can we throw this much food away? And Lee, it was a beautiful thing, Sister Raji. The people started coming. They started calling their friends. The general put a sign out, and people were driving by, you know, do a double take. And sometimes you can look at a person and tell that they're having hard times. And sometimes you can see the tears in their eyes as they're walking up and they find out that it's really free. No, you don't have to register to vote. Even though if you want to, we can direct you in the right place. But this really is just for you to get some food and take care of yourself. As a matter of fact, take some more, fill up your trunk. And people came, and then they started calling their friends and saying, hey, there's food here, and it's really free. And they're saying we can take whatever we want. And people came. And, you know, some of them had stories. And some of the stories were heartbreaking, you know, almost had. Let me share this with you all. I shared some food with a neighbor who I didn't know was hurting, but they were hurting. And then they told me about some church members who were hurting, but the church just didn't have enough to feed them. And we were able to give them some food. And then that night, I got a call to come back and pick up some more food, church member up. And we brought back enough food to feed their entire church of everybody that was hungry and that they had some storage. And then a sister called me and said she had lost her job right after she started taking care of her daughter who was missing and was found in a hospital paralyzed. And she wound up losing her job while taking care of her daughter. And they were running low on food. And she asked if she could get some food. And I told her, I said, come at 6 o'clock in the morning and bring, you know, with your SUV and bring another vehicle if you like, and take as much food as you need. Those are stories of real people, brother. Real people who are hurting in this country, the wealthiest country in the world that has so much food, they have to pay people like me who are farmers not to farm. And then I was driving to pick up some food, and it hit me on the way that just what Sister Rashi said, and, you know, the Bible verse, God said, feed my people. And I always wondered, I can do a little bit, and my prayer every day was for me to be able to sustain myself and my family and make a way so that other people can get fed. And so when the person who helps us get the food told me that they had marked off $500,000 worth of food on the books and that we're the ones that they had given that food to, and when I thought that we had given that food to whoever came that said that they needed it, I wondered how many mouths got fed that night, how many children went to bed with a full stomach with no tears after crying for who knows how long? How many times a father, a husband looked at his wife and felt less than because he wasn't able to provide? But on this day, because of the network that we had established, that he could look at his wife and say that he did provide, and she could look at him and smile and not be worrying about her children going to bed hungry. So I say all that to say that we all can make a difference if we look for that difference to be made. And it's amazing how opportunities open up when you're looking for them.
See, that kind of work right there, people ain't even ready, Rodney, because it means you have to see them people. You can't keep pushing like it's me and I got to make, like you say, can I just sustain myself? You got to look up, see the people doing good. Yeah, that's cool, because we love to see people doing good. We love our celebrities. But then be willing to turn our gaze over to the ones who are doing really, really bad and not see trash, you know, not see a trash, see a human sitting amongst, unfortunately, trash. And so it is, I wish you could teach, you know, how Tony Robbins has his seminars, and everybody got their seminars. Brother Rodney, you need a seminar where you can teach, like, humanity. Hey, that's a human. Feed it. Help him or her bathe, eat. Find them somewhere to be, if not live. Work, if you have work. Share whatever money you have. Share this money. Share this food. Don't let it go in the trash. Don't let it go bad. Brother Rodney, this is something I need you to clarify for me, if you don't mind. How does one mark off $500,000 worth of food? Is this a grocery store that goes bad? Like, how does such a mass of food, you know, come to be, to where it can be given away? Do you know?
Yeah, actually, I do have some insight on that. It's a part of what I said before. We're the richest country, one of the richest countries on the planet, because we have a very rich agricultural base. You know, food and water is the essentials of life, and we have plenty of fresh water. The second largest deposit of fresh water in the world is right here in the United States, and we've been the breadbasket of the world almost ever since those Africans came here and provided that free labor, teaching them how to grow crops that they didn't know how to grow in Europe, like rice, that became America's first cash crop. Those African women bought that braided in their hair when they came over, and when they wouldn't feed us, they planted it in the ground so we could feed ourselves, that then they took and made, really turned into a cash register for the plantation owners. So we've always had plenty. And like I said earlier, we have so much, only about 1% of this nation are farmers. But even in that 1%, they pay some of them our farm. They paid us not to farm because we produce this country, the soil produces so much that even that 1% produces, you know, the brother was making beats talking about, you know, producing. That's sort of where you take almost nothing and turn it into something. Well, we take the dirt and some seeds, and then you have crops, and you always, you know, what's that saying? You reap what you sow, but you always, you know, reap it later. The harvest is later, and we have a bountiful harvest. And because of that, these companies want to keep the prices high. That they create artificial scarcity, and food is an artificial scarcity in this country. And it's actually an artificial scarcity in the world, because there is one country that can produce enough food to feed the whole world, and that's us. There's another continent called Africa that fed the world in riches that the world still reaps those benefits from. Imagine if they turned that continent, or just a few countries in that continent, into an agricultural base that also could feed the world. So it is false scarcity. There is no shortage of food. It's just artificial scarcity. It hikes the prices up. And boy, are those prices hiked. So when these companies can mark off $500,000 worth, that means that they're probably making $2 million on everything else. So it's a big profit for them that they often tell us, well, there's not much profit in food, but there's a huge profit in food.
Because some of it is kind of a tax write-off. Some of it is a marketing, poor marketing scheme where food is remaining, where they didn't want to buy the black cheeseburger buns, stuff like that. Okay, I got you. But still edible food that people should be able to receive and be happy with. Yeah. Thank you, Brother Rodney.
Can I say something about that?
Absolutely, bro.
Yeah, now what we do or what we will have a shortage of, it's funny you mentioned that, brother, is water. Now we in the United States, we do sit on a lot of fresh water, where I live in the Great Lakes. I live in Cleveland, Ohio. But it's only specific to us in this region, in the Great Lakes region. Everyone else gets their water from a lot of the mountaintops when the snow melts and stuff like that, the Colorado River, places like different little tributaries and stuff like that. But pretty soon there's going to be a water shortage, even though this planet is like 80% water. But we can't drink it because it's, you know, salt water. Now, they have desalination plants all around the world, but nothing that would supply a lot of the people that are without water. Like you go into places like Las Vegas, Nevada, you know, whenever you go out to Vegas, they you know, nowadays they tell you, you know, you can't just go running water, and, you know, you got to be careful with how you use your water there because Lake Mead is drying up. And I think that's in the future, in the very near future, that's going to be the new oil, fresh water. Mm. You know, there's the food shortage, like you said. I don't think that there's a food shortage either, but there's definitely going to be a water shortage if they don't come up with some sort of way to start supplying fresh water to people, you know, through desalination, you know.
Brother Bird, the engineering money is going into water from air. A lot of engineering money is going into pulling filter, hyperfiltration of water to remove toxins and all the chemicals and stuff out. So while desalination, and for those who don't know, he's talking about taking ocean water and distilling it until we get fresh water. What he's talking about is taking ocean water and boiling it, distilling it until fresh water can be derived from it.
That's one of the
there
processes.
There are so many oceanographers. They are
one
not
going
to allow that to go down. It's just too many people fighting for the consistency of what is that ocean water before they're going to let that become the way that we keep water for humans. What I'm really interested in is how they're cultivating and using their water in tropical areas. I think what we're going to have to start doing is replanting tropical area, and we're not going to have a problem because the sun is about to beam us right up off of this planet. So our water issues are going to be solved when we reforest planet Earth, and it's going to come soon. It's several projects meaning that way, but we're going to have to get all the countries are going to have, just like we have an anti-nuke program, every country is going to have to adopt the best they can a reforestation project. And I think that's going to have the best results for what you're talking about, sir.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Beans, you were saying the desalinization process, you were trying to get that in?
That's one of the ways through. They would use nuclear energy to do the boiling process to separate the water from the salt. But then the other way is reverse osmosis, where they push the water through very microscopic membranes to separate the salt from the water. Then what's left over is this substance called brine. But then the only problem with the brine is when they push it back out into the ocean, it hires the salt content, which messes up the aquatic life and the ecology of that, that little habitat.
So, you know, fish, they got enough oxygen in the water for them after a while to be able to derive the oxygen through their gills so that they can breathe from the water. So they're trying to figure out what to do with brine as far as some of the uses that can be used, you know, things that they can utilize it for. But I agree with you, ma'am, that it's kind of like what's been going on with so many industries, like with cryptocurrency and stuff. At first it was lampooned or it was dogged, but then once the big wigs, the upper echelon people, once they figure out a way that they can profit from it, you know, like with marijuana and stuff like that, then they'll say, okay, now it's all good. We can smoke weed, or now you can use cryptocurrency. So I think that's what's going to happen with water. Once the people that are in power already, they can figure out a way to get in and muscle in and corner the market and have it for themselves, you know, to where they can charge us all types of astronomical prices for the water. I think then that's when it will happen, when they can monetize that, you know, as opposed to just saying, okay, well, it should be for, you know, for people either for free or, you know, for a decent price, you know. But until then, we'll see what happens. Stay tuned, you know. You never know, you know. But that's, to me, definitely from the research that I've done, a little bit of research, that's going to be the next thing is this water shortage. Because it is indeed a water shortage. Where I live at, we don't have that problem. Living on the Great Lakes, we have water in mass abundance. It's been other states that's tried to buy our water, but we won't sell. You know, but
Hey, Lee, did you hear him say about the decriminalization of marijuana? Did you know that they letting them out of prison, Lee? They letting them out of prison?
I saw that Biden signed that the other day. I agree with Beans. I think that the push is real. The push is solid. I think that if the midterms go the way of the Democrats, they will push for a nationalization of the decriminalization. I think, though, it will stop at a certain point, i.e., you still can't have gazillion tons of marijuana. You know what I'm saying? That ain't going to happen. But I think just for our recreational use, so on and so forth, there'll be something along that line. And then, you know, who knows? They may push for a total decriminalization of, I'm not sure if they'll be able to get that through, because they still got to go through the Republic.
I believe they'll do just like every other industry, man. I mean, if you look at the lottery, you know, blacks and Italians and Jews and Irish had been running numbers back in the late 19th century and early, 20th century, you know, making tons of money off of it. It was illegal. And then once the government came in and said, oh, okay, well, we figure out a way how to put this together and make money off of it, there you go. Everybody goes to play Mega Millions and Powerball and whatever lottery games they have in your respective state. But at one point in time, that was illegal. So it's only once the government comes in. It's just like drugs, you know. A lot of the pharmaceuticals that are sold are very toxic. They can kill you, you know. But it's legal. So someone who works for any of the major pharmaceutical companies, they go to a hospital, they're legalized drug dealers. Yet a person who's selling crack cocaine in 1980 or a person that's selling heroin, back in the 60s up until now, people were selling this fentanyl and all that. And fentanyl was made, it's a man-made substance anyway, but, you know, any of the drugs that are deemed controlled substances or illegal, you know, those people are getting put in jail. But when the government comes in and say, okay, well, we say it's okay, then it's okay. So I think once they decriminalize marijuana on a federal level, where everyone in all 50 states can consume it and sell it or whatever, I don't think they're going to be able to sell it like say, hey, we can just say, hey, let's open up a spot. I think it's going to be like some of the big players. You know what I'm saying? You have to go to Walmart to buy a pound, or you got to go to, you know, wherever. You know what I'm saying? This is going to be for the big players. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of starting like that now. If you notice, it's like, some of the heavy hitters are the ones that are really kind of getting in the game, you know, and the little guy.
Philip Morris already has his cigarettes packaged with the see-through filter. Yeah, it's ready. They've already permutated from wax to gummies. They've done more research on weed genetics than they have on actual cancer. So the trend is there. The taxability is there clearly because we're already getting tax dollars from it. In fact, tax dollars are saving California. They are actually able to pay their income tax returns from alpha dope money. And so what we're talking about here really is how relaxed are we ready to get? We all got a gun. We got that clear. We can get high. We want to be able to get high, chill. We want them to bring those prices all the way down so we don't have to spend all that money. We want to work with at least a month off for a year. What is it? Are we rewriting America's Constitution, but one law, like we shape-shifting it to this new, it's 2020-something, and I'm not going to keep upholding, you know, 1800 ideology, not even 1900 ideology. It's the 2000s, and now we do it like this now. You can legally buy weed now. You can carry your gun open again now, because that's how it used to be, too, back in the day. You could just have your gun. And so if we're rewriting it, what are we doing for us black people? What have we decided we going to write into this new constitution? Because I am not a believer that it's a lot of black people behind the pro-weed movement. That's an older hippie and real younger white movement, really. Black people don't have time to push Proposition 19 weed decriminalization law through, except on the law level. Right, where we are trying to ask them not to give them 17,000 years for two joints. So other than that, what agenda do we have, Lee? What agenda do we have, Rodney, that we're saying, hey, do we have a reparations push? Do we have anything to say since we shape-shift in America right now? And we definitely are through fear and economic flux. What are we doing to push it black, you know?
Well, I'll say this. If you look at the history, this is my opinion, I think that during the 19th century, even though there were some bad things that were going on, in the mid-19th century, slavery was ended, with the, 13th Amendment and stuff like that, the 14th and 15th Amendment, those Reconstruction Amendments. And then, in the early part of the 20th century, women's suffrage and stuff, women were able to vote and whatnot. But the 19th century, to me, was the time when the government was not so much a laissez-faire type thing, but they definitely didn't get themselves too involved in people's business. It's once government became a little bit too big, and that started to take place in the 1930s during FDR's administration. And it seemed good. It was well-intentioned, with the Great Depression and stuff, and a lot of social programs and initiatives were put in place under the New Deal. But when you start to ask the government to help you, you give up a lot of things when you do that. Not just on the personal level, but even in the business community. So I would like to see it go back to a little bit of where the government kind of stays out of the mix and let people earn money, let people do things. And again, I'm not a big fan of guns like I used to be, but to be able to have firearms, in their possession if need be. But when you start to have the government to get a little bit too much involved, you end up giving up a lot of your liberties. And as far as the Constitution, when that whole thing was put together some 240-some years ago, it's very remarkable that those guys, all those years ago, put something together that could still be tweaked
and moved around and kind of fixed here and there, you know, because this whole democracy thing has been an experiment from day one, you know. And so for them to be able to have that document to be loose like that and not so tight, you know what I mean, to where you can change it up and add things here, add amendments, take out amendments, put in certain acts and take out, you know, have acts repealed. I think that's the beautiful thing. I think that's going to be, as long as this country is in existence, that's going to always be, you know, and that's part of the democratic process. As far as African-Americans, blacks in this country, as far as getting things pushed that would be germane to us, you know, pertinent to us, again, it just takes people to come together and actually utilize the democratic process. So that's what it's for. It's for the people, by the people. So all of these laws that we've had, like the criminalization of marijuana or cocaine, that came from a certain group that maybe had some people that went nuts or did this or did that, and they said, hey, get rid of that. We don't want that. And they went and they lobbied, and they had that stuff introduced as a bill. The Senate and the House signs off on it. The President signs off on it. It's all good. Now it's a law. So I think with us being 13.5% of the U.S. population, we have more than enough numbers. If we push the agenda, you can get a lot of things passed, a lot of things passed. But you have to take an active stance in this democratic process. You have to. If we sit back idle and we don't, you know, get out and actually do anything, then you'll be left with what's given to you.
Rodney often says that, you know, the government is the people, so I'm pretty sure he got something to say on that. What's your thoughts, Rodney?
Well, there were some good words that Brother Bing just laid down, and I hope everybody picked it up. But I do think that we have to sort of re-educate ourselves that the government is not an entity of others. The government is us. When it's an entity of others, it's when the us and black people remove themselves from that equation. And we have always been the ones who have pushed the government forward. The reason why women got the right is because the reason why women got the right to vote, white women anyway, is because black men got the right to vote. The reason why all white men got the right to vote is because black men got the right to vote. And that right to vote immediately changed the makeup of this country and changed the direction of this country, because once black people got the vote, even though whites at the time did not think black people were literate enough to understand the power of the vote and vote, we voted in droves and changed the landscape. I got our first senators in 1870, right? And truly has changed the country up into this day. That's one reason why almost immediately those Southerners went about the business of restricting that right to vote. And even when I was born in this country, you know, we didn't have the right to vote because I was born before the Voting Rights Act. And even after the Voting Rights Act, black people were still different from every other citizen, because the Voting Rights Act that gave us full citizenship had to be reapproved by our former masters. And now we see it under President Obama's tenure, the other side gutted the main provision of the Voting Rights Act, which meant that they were gutting my citizenship. And people, especially white people and especially white women, did not respond fast enough to that because it didn't impact them. But not realizing they had the right to vote because of us. And then after they gutted that provision and started doing very restrictive practices throughout this country, not just limited to the South, now we see Roe fail. We see not only did Roe fall, but we almost saw that Democratic Republic with a constitution that Bean talked about, it almost failed, because of those same people who never stopped attacking the principles of that Constitution, which, though a very transformative document in its time, far from the best document of constitutions in the world since then. And we have to, I was just, somebody just posted something about education. And it's like, you know, Frederick Douglass told us that if we don't keep pushing, keep striving, I think is the word that, the phrase that he used, we're going to lose it. Benjamin Franklin, after the founding of this country and the adoption of the Constitution, told us that we had a democratic republic if we could keep it. He also said that, I believe it was either him or Jefferson, that says, in order for this form of government to work, you have to have an educated populace. Well, most people don't know how our form of government, because it's our form, it's the people's government. Most don't know how it works. And so there's onus on us. And back when there was slavery, full-blown slavery, I'll put it that way, because the 13th Amendment didn't eradicate slavery, because it still left a provision for slavery and incarceration. And in some states, 80 to 90% of those incarcerated since the Constitution, since the 13th Amendment, are black people. As a matter of fact, if you go to New York, there's Rikers is about 80 to 90% black people today. So that that type of slavery still exists all over this country. But my main point is that we have to recognize that this form of government works when we're educated. This form of government works when the majority participate. And this form of government has worked the best for all people, including us, is when that 12.5%, because this country was made up of 12.5% black people, Africans, during slavery, and it's only about 13.3% today. It's amazing how it really hasn't changed that much. But that small percentage, though, really, we're the ones that dictate who wins and who loses. We have that power. Nobody else has that power. They knew it early in the game, which is why they tried to restrict it with Jim Crow. That's why they tried to take it away after President Obama got elected, because, wow, they got a black man in office. They got some white collaborators. And now Roe has fallen. This country has almost fallen. And I would say black people, and I'm going to add a little extra emphasis for black men, even though black men vote at an inordinate rate. The only people who vote at a greater rate than black men is black women. And that's by just a few percentage points, is we got to get in the game and take ownership of this country, because we're the ones who are at the helm of this country, even though they try to tell us that we're not major players. We are the player. We just need to start acting like it. We're the boss.
Absolutely. Especially on the grassroots level, when you look at the work, as you start trying to say, well, who keeps the city sanitized? The black man does, usually. Who keeps these children, you know, in the classroom? A black woman does, because black women, teaching is a major profession for black women. So if you look at the actual grassroots work of what needs to happen to keep the city thriving, it's grassroots black activist work, bringing food to those up under the underpass. That's grassroots black activist work. Feeding children in the morning before they go to school. QEP and Bobby Seale tell you, black activist work. So we have so much to do, though, Brother Rodney, that it's imperative that we connect up. And I would like for Radio Established to Address Life to be that place where folks who have resources, computers that they, hey, I have computers in my city and I'd like to give them away. I'd like us to be able to, you know, advertise that those computers exist and see if we can establish a connection where children who don't have them can now get them another computer. I'd like us to be a venue, just like you are, Brother Rodney, with the food. I'd like us to attempt to be a venue for the needs of our people. If it's books that's needed, somebody should be able to come on the Real Radio site and say, hey, this is, you know, the church librarian, blah, blah, blah. It's always happening here. Please forgive me. And we just want to know that we can get some books donated. And then once you put that on and put the address or whatever, people can begin to gift. Instead of throw away, you can say, hey, I do have these books. So I would like
to put that in the air, Mr. Rodney, as a possible use for our online media, for our platform in general, as a place where major needs, not like I need my lights paid, not that's not what we're talking about, but things like, that's major. But something like they need food, they need books, they need computers, they need, well, you know.
But you haven't
we about
said
to come
anything.
Into cold season. We need coats,
but
right?
But you haven't said anything that Rodney hasn't done. Rodney did the book drive, was successful in that. Rodney's done the food drive. I'm telling you, and Beans, I know you didn't notice when you said it earlier, but Rodney lives in Vegas. So Rodney is Mr. Vegas. You know, you come to Vegas, you need some, all you got to do is ask, go to a corner, ask for Rodney Smith. Everybody know him. It ain't hard. Just like, I need Rodney Smith. Oh, I got his number right here. Here you go, boom. There it is.
Usually when I'm in Vegas, I'm drunk and high off of cigars. I would get my ride. I might be sprawled out somewhere in a casino.
I feel you. Well, look, he is a true cat of Vegas. Like, the strip is not where it's at. Look, let me tell you something. I stopped going to the strip years ago. Like, it is not be at all. Like, next time you want to go to Vegas, call me. I'll go out with you. I'll show you Vegas. I'll show you the real Vegas. You'll be like, yo, you got to get out the strip, dog. It's so much more to do in Vegas than be on the daggone strip. I promise you, man. You know, and I know you said you lost some bit of affinity toward guns, but you got to go shooting with us one time because it's something special. It really is. It reminds you of being on the range back in the Air Force. It really does. It really, really does. I'm sorry, Rodney. Beans is an Air Force veteran as well. So, yeah, definitely. So, it's nice, man. It's so nice out there. You got to go on a day when it's not hot, though, because it will beam down on them guns and your hands will be hot as hell. You hear me? Hey, I got Roxy out there shooting. So, if I got Roxy out there shooting, I know you can go out there shooting with us. You know what I'm saying?
Do you know how many comments? I got so many comments of me with an AR-15 in my hand, looking like I had been born with it dang near. People are like, but I'm like, hey, if you're not prepared, Mr. Rodney explained it so clear. He said, when they get mad, he gave me the they. I know who they are. They don't burn down their own houses. They don't. When you watch the villagers come, they walk with their pitchforks. They walk with their torches. They walk to where they think the threat is. And if they think you're the threat and you're not prepared, what you are is prey. You're not even theoretically prepared for what happens. And it's not like we're saying something that can't happen. This is something that has happened more than once. In fact, this is something that has happened recently when they chased down the dude who was running in the house. He went to look at the interior design of the empty house, and when he came out, they asked him what he was doing there. He was jogging. He said he just wanted to look like people do, and they chased him down and killed him. They do this. So if you know the possibility exists, you should be prepared. And I just thank Brother Rodney. Kind of explaining to me why I should have gun residue on my hand like that. But it was a fantastic, fantastic trip. I still think about that trip. Vegas is awesome.
Oh, yeah, Vegas is
go
nice.
Go ahead, Ben.
I was just going to say, but you know, there's a reason behind that, and it's to piggyback off of what Brother Rodney was talking about when he alluded to the voting thing. And whatnot. In the beginning, it was the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, the blue bloods. They had it all, and everybody else was up under them. So all of these people that we label as white today, we're talking Polish, we're talking the Italians, Jews, all these different people. They were not considered part of that collection of white people, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, all of these other Europeans, They were beneath them. But those upper echelon Europeans made them feel like, okay, well, you can slightly be one of us because you're better than those blacks. And it's those are the people that are the ones that commits all of these atrocities against us. You understand what I'm saying? But if they were to sit and realize that we're not the enemy here, you know, it's the big wigs that have us beefing with one another so that they can run away with all the spoils. If they were to realize that, then that's when stuff would really get real. You know what I mean? That's when things would really get real. So that's why I don't subscribe too much to the whole thing of white against black, because really it's not so much a white against black thing. It's a class against class. You know, it's more so it's like the upper crust.
I don't like the distortion of that fact, because if you talk class on class and you say who's in which class, and between Oprah and the dude Byron Allen and that other dude, it ain't enough of us in that 1% for you not to see that there's a racial element in this. When you say class on class, you start making it look like the richer of the black race has a shared agenda in our own destruction, when what they just trying to do is climb as high as they can on whatever game it is they playing. Which,
believe
when
it
you
or
push
not,
class on class, this is what I just need you to
it
hear. It's cold. Mm-hmm. It's cold. It's cold. Class on class is cold. When the beginning of what makes the classification system is partially built on discrimination of the other race. You got that ability to be in that class because of what you did financially, economically, historically to another race of people, not a class of people, a race of people. So you can't turn that gains, those ill-gotten gains now, and to know it wasn't nothing racial. We was just playing a class game. No, you didn't go get a whole bunch of poor people and enslave them. You went and got a whole bunch of Africans, you know what I'm saying, and in fact also Chinese, and enslaved them. And so when you start playing that class on class, pervert the actual reality that the class system is built on wealth, and that wealth is built on discrimination of keeping out some people from economic gains. It's not fair.
Ma'am, how many people you think back during the Civil War that were fighting on the side of the Confederate States owned slaves?
About 20% of them. Because you don't own one slave. You own it ain't that many plantation owners willing to send their sons out to war. They sent one or two, but they didn't empty the whole plantation out of men, or else they didn't have no plantation.
But what I'm saying, ma'am, is that I don't know the numbers neither. I don't have the raw numbers in front of me. But what I'm saying is, at that time, most of those people that were fighting on the side of the Confederacy were poor whites that didn't own slaves, but what they were fighting for was to maintain a certain lifestyle, a certain way of life, to where they were above us. The whole thing with Reconstruction and why it failed was because you had a president, Andrew Johnson, who was first president to be impeached because of all of the things that he was doing to try to pretty much destroy Reconstruction. He was fighting against Congress tooth and nail. But most of the people in the South, the white people that we call them, they were poor. And for them, even though they didn't own slaves, and then some of the people were wealthy, but I'm saying the ones that were poor, they just wanted to have a system in place to where they can still be above the blacks, the black Africans that were brought over and their descendants. That's what they wanted. And it's still like that to this day. When you hear a lot of these people, you know, talk about they're coming to take our jobs, they're coming to do this, they're coming to do that, they're still indoctrinated with that mentality that they are above, you know, African Americans and other brown people. When in actuality, the people that are above them dupe them to believe this and get them so enraged to have them to fight their fight, keep them and us fighting against one another so that they can do whatever they do. Donald Trump played on that perfectly to win his election. You think Donald Trump cared about some person from way out in the backwoods of Mississippi or North Carolina or Alabama? No. He couldn't identify with
Southwestern Ohio.
But he spoke to them, or even in Southern Ohio. He talked to them and fed them the rhetoric that they needed to hear to make them feel like, yeah, we're better than them. We're better than the Mexicans. We're better than this person, better than that person. So that's what I'm saying about class. And even for the people of color that have achieved certain financial success, like the Oprahs or the Byron Allens, you know, a lot of them. Now, I wouldn't say Byron Allen. He seems pretty real and seems like he's he put his money where his mouth was in trying to fight against that whole situation that goes back to the laws back in the 1800s. But people like Oprah and them, I doubt very highly if they truly altruistically care about what's going on with African Americans in this country, the ones that are living in poverty or the ones that are damn near close to it or anything like that, any of the plight that blacks are experiencing in this country, because they felt that they have arrived. Mm. They have been welcomed in by their upper echelon that tells them, oh, you're different from them. You're not like them. Why, you're where you are now. You're different. Come on over here with us. You know, and that's, to me, that's the play. It's the class thing. It's about who has the money and who doesn't. But even when you get the money, you can only go but so far, because at the end of the day, it's those WASP. Those ones that created Harvard and Yale and Princeton, all of those big the upper crust, those old families, those Roosevelts and all those type of people. Those people don't identify themselves with any of the Italians or the Polish or Ukrainians or any people like that. They're above them.
Yeah.
But they tell them they tell the people below them that, hey, you're above those blacks. And it's just one big old us fighting against us, because we don't even accept diversity within our own, within blacks in this country. We don't. You got people within cities that don't even, east siders don't mess with west siders. You know, people from the Bronx don't mess with people from Brooklyn, or, you know, people from the south side of Chicago don't mess with brothers from the west side of Chicago. It's just that separation thing. And it happens in the continent of Africa as well. I mean, that's just from what I've got. I don't have all the answers, but I'm just saying that, to me, it always seems like it's this, I don't mean to mystify these people, to deify them like they're some, like, mystic force, but there's some people up top, and they keep the people at the bottom fighting. Why they take everything?
You see, they want us to think it's everything, brother. It looks golden. It does shine. It is so sparkly, and it looks brand new. But they don't have everything, and I didn't understand that until I start seeing what affluent people have to go through. First of all, you don't want to be really rich, because now it's safe to hate you. You know, honestly, there's two type of people: those who want to be rich and those who look at all it took for them to get it and just despise the character that it becomes. You understand? They see all the exploitation. They see the ability to cast off people's feelings and even their health in the future, and they don't want to join it, even if it means cashing in really nice. They don't want to do it. And then there are those who are willing. They're like, hey, I cannot suffer like this. I don't want to be in the trenches. I don't want to roll around in the mud. And it is. And I just need you to hear that when you look around in the mud, when you look around in the food pantry line, when you look around at the Section 8 sign-up open window that happens once a week, if you can get in, when you look around at who you are amongst in the line to help you get your utilities paid, you realize you're right. It's not white and black. These are poor people. These are uneducated people. These are actually physically sick people who can't participate in the employment system the way we think people should be. And so while I hear you, brother, we're talking about haves, we're talking about have-nots. When you look in the line and you start doing a statistical analysis, you realize there is some color element there. I will back down there. There is just color element in the struggle. And when you start trying to remove that, you end up bringing food to an affluent white church instead of the one that needs it, right? You end up trying to bring books to children who have iPads. You end up trying to serve people who don't need your service. They need to be the ones who serve because you're treating it like everybody's everybody when there's something to it. And if you look in where the service needs to be, you'll see it. You'll see who's coming to the free lunch that the church gives out. When you look up from your beams and stuff, you'll see who's there. And so most people don't get that far down in. They don't need that way. And so they can talk about the needs of the poor. They can talk about the needs of those who don't have in their fairly comfy, you know, condo and house and apartment and, you know, that they rent with a secured income. But please hear, because Brother Rodney has seen us under the bridge, just know that when you get down in there, you'll see who's down in there. Some of us are mentally ill, some of us are physically ill, and some of us are just unable to participate because we don't want to talk and be what we have to be in order to make the money that we want to make. And you can make that whatever it is, but I know what I'm talking about. There are some industries you just can't be yourself. You can't be authentically whatever you are at home. And so you have to go and switch into your other self in order to survive with your family. And it's legit. But for those who can't do that, okay, they are under that bridge. And there is no real agenda for us. And best as they can say is when you see us under the bridge, they give us a couple of dollars. It is not a sufficient plan. So this is what I'm saying when I asked earlier, what are black people doing to push our agenda into the future? And that is going to be kind of where I orient my commentary for the next, you know, for the next 6 months to a year. Most of my guests, most of my commentary is going to be about pushing a black, African-American, black, diasporan-focused agenda onto the mindsets and onto the possible legislature, who knows, of what we're supposed to be doing, at least reporting on it when I see it, when I see us pushing in a Black Lives Matter sense, in a whatever sense. So you can look for me to bring that kind of information in the future, Lee, Rodney, Mr. Bean.
Well, I'm going to say this, and I feel where you're coming from with the homeless. I have a brother that was homeless. He just came out of it, and my uncle was homeless. Both of them suffered from mental illness. Well, my uncle just passed away back in 2020, but he lived in New York for 50-something years. He would get an apartment, and then he would leave the apartment and just be out in the street because of what he had, you know, suffered from schizophrenia and stuff like that. So I understand the homeless component pretty well. So I agree with you 100% on that. But that's not specific to any race. That's just mental illness is mental illness, you know. But what you're saying about as far as the agenda, again, it goes back to what Brother Rodney had mentioned. Us as the constituency, as the electorate, we need to educate ourselves. There are people who don't know the three forms of the three branches of government and their respective functions, and that's sad. I'm not saying you have to be a political nerd But in order to be in this thing we call democracy and this democratic republic, we need to educate ourselves to know that it's not just the president who pushed the buttons, but also the Senate and the House. You know, we have to get out there and know that we have the right to assemble. We can petition. We can, you know, write our congresspeople, you know, and say, hey, look, this is what I want. We get together because it's that's what it was set out to do. And we have to get out there. We have the numbers, not just in, as far as our population, but we also have the numbers as far as money. And if we can get black people in America to become more educated on the fiscal side, as far as how what we do with our money, and also on the political side, as far as getting more into learning about government and how this government works, because the government is us. If we can do that, then you'll start to see some changes. You know, the changes that were made in the past was because some people educated themselves and got themselves out there, and they pushed and they got a lot of things done. But at times, some of those things that were done in the past have almost been done in vain, because look at today, the culture that we have, regardless of what city you live in or what state you live in this country, black people are still going through the same thing because of this culture that we've created of being, even though we are victims, but you can't just lay in being a victim. You've got to become a victor and get yourself out of that and say, I can make it, because if you think that you can do it. You know, we have to do that. We have to change that. We have to hold ourselves accountable, men and women both, you know, and then put that in our children so that our children can carry on generations, you know. And that's all I'm going to say on that.
Well, that's enough. I want to start on, we have 18 minutes left. I want to start bringing this to the focal. Bringing it back, if you will. You know, I was really trying to, as you all were having your dialogue, trying to think of my most memorable moment during these 10 years that we've done. And I really have not thought of one.
Your best friend, Mr. John.
Oh, you talking about the one from New York? You talking about John from New York? Oh, my goodness. You know what? I need to reach out to him and see if he's okay, because I haven't talked to him in a while.
Hell no, John, he ain't okay. I know he's exactly. A sociopath. Hell no, he ain't okay.
I know
okay,
exactly
can I tell
who
you
you're talking about.
My secret so far has been the lady who convinced her gentleman friend. I think she said she's 60, and he's like 60-something. She's 60-something. They're in their 60s. And him and her go out to the park sometimes, and they get naked and they have sex in the park.
You talking about Jackie? I got you. Yeah. You talking about Jackie? Okay.
And if he want to be with her, he get his ass in that park and he get naked.
Oh okay. Man, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, for real. You know, look. You don't know who you just open a can of worms up with. You know what I'm saying? Beans, be good. Be good, boy. Be good. Hell, boy. Hell.
I'm chilling.
You know,
one of my favorites is our doctor. Our doctor is really, really, I love what she
could
on.
Make it
doctor,
she could not make
so
it
She's so patient with you. She's so patient with me. Her verbiage is so calm. I love the doc when she comes on, because I feel like I don't have to do so much crowd control. You know, she can hear some of the deep-rooted misogyny. She can see, like, she can clear the smoke a little bit. You know what I'm saying? I love when the doc is on. And we got to make sure that we get the doc on again soon.
Yeah, she actually had a conference to speak. She was a keynote speaker. Her and someone else had a conference today, so she couldn't make it on. I did reach out to her, but she was not available, unfortunately. I think that the show that we did about the BDSM, that was a great show.
Baby, she told me that 95% of the black men she see have to have something inserted in their anal canal. Mm. I was hit on the floor, baby, on the floor.
I think one of the most impactful shows we did was having the show about the sisters whom were in the military and experienced sexual assault. I think I remember that one intently.
Hey, they poisoning the military personnel up there
at
Camp Lejeune. Lejeune, I mean.
Lejeune.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, peeled my hair. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to share it.
Hold on. Let me finish. Rodney, remember our in-processing briefing at Coonzon? The first thing that came out their mouth was, the water is safe to drink. That was the first thing that came out of their mouth. First thing. Because at Coonzon, the water was brownish and it had a smell to it. So them poisoning the military ain't nothing new. The military being under, other than good conditions, ain't nothing new. It ain't nothing new at all. That water stank. It actually had a smell to it. And it was brownish in color. For real, for real. For real, for real. Go ahead, Rodney.
Well, nor is Camp Lejeune the only military installation that's dealing with this and that's been dealing with it for years. You go to most closed bases and you find out that they're one of those hazardous fun sites because of the damage that the base has done to the land that was there. So we're hearing about Camp Lejeune in the news, but it's not just Camp Lejeune. But what it does remind me of is it takes me right back to Flint, Michigan, though, is when you let these things fester, or we could go down to Mississippi. When you let the infrastructure, leave it alone and let it suffer, especially because it's a group of controlled people like in the military or controlled people in areas like Flint and like Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi, the capital.
We're under a boil order, Brother Rodney. We're under a boil order right now in Kansas City, Missouri.
Well, like Brother Bean said, there's no shortage of fresh water in this country, but we get to that false scarcity again. And I'm going to go back to something else Brother Bean said. We, as black people, have to insert ourselves into the process in an even bigger way because they have never stopped attacking us, and they will use whatever means that are available to them, whether it's the failing infrastructure in our communities, even if that means some of their own people have to suffer, as long as it makes us suffer more, they're happy with that. And so if we want this country to be what it can be and what it should be, it really is going to be the voice of the African American, the African American, that's going to make that difference. So it's time for us to stand up like those who came before us, just as big and tall, and maybe even more so if we want to help this country. And the reason why I say help this country is because this is our country too. We built this peace. And so if we want to help this country, help ourselves, we got to stand up and be that spice that we've always been, because spice makes everything better. We've always made this country better, hence made the world better. And we need to recognize our power and then stand and speak in that power.
Did you tell that to them people over there in Europe? Anyhow, it's about the spice part, because good Lord, they don't know how to put that. Anyhow, honestly, man, just I can't say again how appreciative I am of everybody's time. Honestly, you know, from you all to listeners to countless amount of guests that we've had. Just, y'all, just thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here week in and week out. You all make the engine go. And I'm just so happy, man. I don't know what to say. I really am at a loss for words. I didn't know how long the ride was going to ride. I'm sorry. I didn't know how long the ride was going to go. Making it 10 years was never a thought, good or bad. Honestly, just took it one day at a time. There was a bad patch, obviously. 2015 was the bad patch, without a doubt. We had Audra pass away. 3 weeks later, my uncle passed away. I was a wreck. I was straight up a wreck, just trying to map out life, trying to figure things out, didn't know what to do, where it was going. And I think it showed. But finding that mojo again, being able to lean on people who have been solid and consistent has definitely allowed us to rebound and get back to where we were. And I just plan on continuing to push and pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing until we say, yeah, you know what, it was a good run, but time to do something different. You know, Rashi has a grandchild now. I have a grandchild now. Rodney's son going to get married one day, hopefully soon. He'll have grandchildren.
I'm actually low key looking for Rodney's son's bride right now. I didn't want to say nothing. I'm low key looking, but I think I found her. But I got to shake this other clown off of her real quick. But I think I'd have found Rodney's daughter-in-law. But she's a teacher. She may be willing to relocate, though. So hold on. I'm working on it, Mr. Rodney.
Hey, well, I want you to know that my son, thank you all. He and I spoke about that last night and on his parting words. And Lee, he's taking pictures because he don't have many pictures of himself. So he got some pictures for, your Jamaican-est friend. He likes what he see and what I told him about her. He wants to know more, so you and I need to have that conversation offline. But
no,
one of the
Rodney,
things that my son
no, Rodney,
one of the things my,
no, don't go through Lee. That's not gonna work. Don't go through Lee.
Right now he's open to whatever, and I want to share these words with you that he shared with me. Is he says, you know, nowadays trying to find the right one that needs to be a team sport and a family affair. And I was like, you know, son, sometimes what once was will be again. And here we are full circle with almost not quite traditional arranged marriage, but families having and friends like Lee, that is family, having a hand in helping him find the bride. So all of you who are listening, my son is 32 and he has almost all of the blocks checked that y'all typically say you want to see. And he wants to have a wife for life.
He got us. I found him a stunner. I'm telling you, the girl got so much. Woo, good Lord.
That girl got
so much class.
You can't be covered in your nephew's. Heck, you can't be covered in your nephew's.
No, she's like, keep it cool.
I just want to let
no. She's like a baby sister.
I'm down. I just want to let all of our listeners and y'all three know I'm down for 10 more. 10 more. I'm gonna come with a young voice. I'm gonna bring the children in if I can, because it's always about the young voice. I'm gonna do my best to get more women on our show. I feel like we're men heavy. I'm gonna do my best to get more current people who are adjacent to current happenings on the show. It'll be local, but it'll be pertinent. You understand? However, all I'm asking is that you all be there with us, you know, that you commit, you know, to what's happening between us, because this is important information. People can listen to this show, and at the end, they know to get their will in order. They know how that you get 30 days before they can evict you. They know where to go get some food. They know how to sign up for the loan forgiveness program or to sign up for the loan forgiveness. They know that their uncle finna come home from his weed charge. They know that, you understand, that this country has a certain military strategic things in plan where we're not out here just floating. Between you and I and Brother Robbie, Brother Barry, and all the others who have come to share with us over time, we are a source of information. Where other people are spreading rumors and gossip and innuendo and how they feel about something, we share actionable information. And as long as that's what's our agenda, you have me on, Lee. You have me on your team as long as we have this agenda. And maybe even a little after we sway, but not much longer than that. All right? I'm on you. I'm on y'all's team. You hear? And that's a hard thing to enlist because I'm an awesome team member. I come with research capabilities. So just know that I love my time with you all. And I would rather do this than braid hair. I'd rather do this than tutor children. I'd rather do this than clean and care for my aging and elderly household. I'd rather do this than sometimes my actual job. So thank you, Lee. Thank you, Mr. Rodney. Thank you, Sam Smith. Thank you, Angela. Thank you, Aubrey. You understand? And thank you all those journalists who came before us, Frederick Douglass, all right, W.E. Du Bois. Who's that brother we just lost?
Bernard Shaw.
Thank you. Thank you for all those people who have a black voice and have decided we're going to put it out there. Ida B. Wells, that's right, Brother Rodney. Thank you for all those people who have said, Frederick Douglass and the likes, we have our own voice. We have our own voice. It's a legitimate voice. It is to be heard. There is pertinent information being shared. Sign on or be left behind, right, Brother Lee?
Well, look, Rodney, you got anything to say at the end here?
10 years is no easy feat. And when you have 10 years under your belt, really it's just what are you going to do next? And, you know, it makes a statement. It puts down a marker. And Lee, you put down that marker with the support and help of Sister Rashi and the other cast members, Brother Bean. You know, we all contributed to making this happen, but happened is past tense. Now it's what are we going to make happen?
You ain't never lied on that. Oh, hold on. Before we go, I'm going to get Donnie on. Cause you
Brother
caught us
Glover.
As we were going out the door. No, not Donnie Glover. This is Donnie Glover. This is Donnie Short. This is the original founder of the Black Planet Meet and Greets. This is my man right here. This is my Sam Smith. How you doing, Don?
Man, I tell you what. I am so honored to be here on your 10th anniversary. You have no idea. One of the beautiful things about this beautiful man, is he will take what other people do, what other people does, or whatever they may do, and he will enhance it and augment it and grow it into something else. We used to have Meet and Greet Radio, and Lee would come on. I only did that for 2 years, but this is his 10th anniversary of following that model. I mean, come on, somebody. We got an extraordinarily intelligent man here, forward-thinking, always conscious. We don't use the word woke anymore because they stole that from us, but he's always conscious of what needs to be done. Okay, the intersection of intelligence and action is invested in this man, Lee A. Vaughn Jr. And I am so proud to be your friend more so than your colleague or anybody else. You know, you're my friend. And as I told you before, man, I love you, and I truly do love you very deeply, man. I'm so happy and proud of you under this moment. And you and your sister friend who rolls with this, man, your co-pilot on this, come on now. This is something for everybody.
That's right.
Come on, baby. You know, all I'm saying is that y'all are trailblazers. And as I heard the young man just say, there's more trails to blaze going forward here, right?
Blaze,
there's
right.
more beyond beyond Oz. There's something beyond Oz. And if it's there for you, you will find it, man. I love you so much. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. Well, that's the perfect way to end it. Look, y'all, as we always say about this time, we love you. Ain't a damn thing you can do about it. We've saved that for the past 10 years. We're going to save it for another 10 at least. You all be good. You all be safe. Until next week. Peace!
Come on, somebody.